Devoncast
from Radio Axe.
Welcome to Devoncast and another look at things going on around the county. I'm Paul Nero from Devon's Radio Axe. Later, we'll be looking into housing issues in West Devon, where a former office building is being converted into temporary accommodation for people who need homes urgently. We'll have a roundup of community stories too, and the £4 million revamp for a Teignbridge leisure complex, which has had its share of controversy along the way.
Devoncast
from Radio Axe.
First, this month's edition of Devon Life has a guest editor, and despite this being the first occasion he's done the job, he's had his name, or at least his title, on the cover since its inception, the Earl of Devon. You might have been in his house or garden at Powderham Castle, which has been the family home since the 14th century. Lord Devon was asked to take over Devon Life for August by the person who does the job full-time, Catherine Courtney. And they're both here on this week's Devoncast, so hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Catherine, we'll start with you. Did you fancy a month off? Has what you've done been more work than usual?
Actually, a few people have said, oh, you've had a month off. That must be quite nice. It's not quite like that. There's been a lot of working with Charlie on this issue. No, not a month off.
So, Charlie, may we call you Charlie?
Yes, please do.
I know
yes.
We always go through this little thing. I say Lord Devon, you say Charlie. You are Charlie Courtney. At the end of your first article in there. You're Earl of Devon at the top. We've got Catherine Courtney. There has to be some link somewhere.
There has to be, but we've been trawling through the record books and we can't find exactly where we parted company, but we did have a cadet branch up in North Devon, which is where Catherine's from.
We're both Devon families, aren't we? Whatever.
And this ties in because of the 700th anniversary of the castle, but 1540-something, I think, is when your family first moved in.
Yeah, no, so we're commemorating this year the 700th anniversary of Powderham coming into the family. There was a marriage in August of 1325 between Hugh de Courtenay, who was the second Courtney Earl of Devon, and this wonderful lady, Margaret de Bohun, who was a granddaughter of the King, Edward I. And she brought with her, as part of her dowry, the manor of Powderham. So it was one of the sort of last pieces in the assemblage of the Courtney Empire back in the days. And the castle wasn't built then. It was built actually by her son Philip, some sort of 80 years later. But it was the year that the Powderham came part of the family estates.
Were you born there?
I was born, well, I was actually born in the RD&E in Exeter.
But, right, so
I,
just
I
up
grew
the road.
I grew up at Powderham. It was very much my childhood home and is still my home today.
And you start your own column, because Catherine has given you a column in Devon Life, by talking about how you became the 19th Earl, which sadly started in the RD&E, where you talk about your death of your father.
Yeah.
Just tell me something about that passage, which is a sobering article.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's an interesting set of anniversaries this summer. I turned 50 in August.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. It was also 10 years since my dad died. He died 4 days after my 40th birthday. You know, there are lots of bits to commemorate this year, and I thought it would work really nicely to sort of talk about them all together in the article, talk a little bit about what it means to become the Earl, the process by which it happens. There are some wonderful old traditions around the ringing of the bells in Exeter Cathedral, but also some very personal memories of, you know, being a relatively normal person and then being faced with taking on the responsibility of Powderham and the opportunities that being the Earl of Devon provides.
I'll say this carefully. Your family donated the biggest bell in the UK after Big Ben.
Yes, although it was at the time, I think, it was before Big Ben was cast. At the time, I think it was probably one of the largest bell in the country. But it's called the Great Peter Bell, and it hangs in the North Tower of Exeter Cathedral, and it was donated, we understand, by Peter Courtney, the Bishop of Exeter, in about 1475 to 1480. He was the bishop then.
And we hardly ever hear it, do we?
It doesn't get rung very often. Obviously, there's a great peal of bells in the South Tower, which is the bells that you normally hear. I think they do ring it on occasion, but it specifically gets rung in our family's tradition on the death of an earl.
So that was your first task. So tell me about that.
Yeah, so it was shortly after my father had died, and you basically get invited, the Dean of Exeter Cathedral invited us along to listen to the ringing of the bell, and they toll the bell for the number of years that the Earl who has died was the Earl of Devon. And it's quite poignant, you know, because it's a remarkable sort of resonance and sound. And of course, my grandfather, who some of your listeners may remember, had actually been Earl of Devon from 1936 to 1998 when he died. So you can imagine when
he died.
So that
was a big job.
Yeah, we had to stand there for bloody hours listening to. But you're really listening to his years being rung out. And then my dad was Earl from 1998 to 2015, so a good 17 years. And obviously, next time it rings, it's going to be for me. So we'll try and.
So
make
we
sure
won't hear it until. I'd like to say, I've been looking forward to hearing it, but that would be a sad occasion. Tell me about the articles and how you came to decide what you were going to put in Devon Life for this special edition.
It began really about a year ago, I think, when I was at a talk. A Wolf Hall talk, funnily enough, and listening in on that. And Charlie was there speaking and at the time mentioned about the 700th anniversary. So that prompted me to sort of approach Charlie a year ago and say, how about us doing some articles on the 700th, which we did, leading up to the guest editing. And he, I'm so delighted to know that he did agree and said he would. So then it was a case of really just going through the magazine. So Charlie sort of looked at it, went through it. We have lots of different sections covering all sorts of things to do with Devon. It's history, it's outdoor life, it's food, it's everything. So he went through each section and then selected something, things that were personal to him. And a lot of things were about ex-estuary, Powderham, home, but also the wider Devon issues. He brought some of that in. We're not necessarily known for covering deeper issues in that sense, or those larger sort of topics in the sense a newspaper would, but it did bring a nice, we had looked at housing, we looked at various things, as well as some fun things. There's some entertaining features in there, but they were all really everything. Charlie went through the whole magazine. He went through every section, looked at columnists, everything.
We'll come to the columnist in a second, because the columnist is remarkable. In terms of food, who did you choose?
So we had, I was quite keen to celebrate the ex-estuary and the food that you get on and around the estuary. There's a lovely picture, actually, of the River Ex Cafe that sits on the middle of the River Ex. And one of the things I really wanted to do is to reflect what I see as Devon's real strengths and the fact that there's such a wonderful food heritage around the county. And obviously that seafood heritage as well was really important. So I was glad that we were able to celebrate that. And just a shout out to Catherine and her team, because I know some people have joked that she may have had an easy month with someone else in the editorial seat. It was very hard for her because she really still did all the hard work, and I was able to influence a bit of the choice and work with some of the writers who were brilliant. But I sent her on some slightly wild goose chases, I think.
There's a great piece about Michael Caine's Academy in there as well.
Yes, that was another one that I know, Charlie, you were talking about, weren't you? How actually, we all know Michael, all the work he's done, but this whole, what they do at Exeter, and just the training of the chefs of the future. Not just chefs, it's the whole hospitality, which is so in need of it as well at the minute, a big boost. And it was a lovely way to give it a boost in the magazine.
Yeah, I think one of the most significant institutions that I've come upon in my sort of 10 years now here in and around Exeter is Exeter College. They do remarkable things. And, you know, it's a real success story of the county, the whole county, because it really draws kids from across the county. And obviously Michael Caine's work is amazing. And a friend of my daughter's is in the Michael Caine's Academy, and I've followed her progress through it. So it was really nice. And actually Stafford Pitts, who's the teacher, is also known to me, married to a lady who's worked at Powderham for many, many years. So it felt like a bit of a home story, but also one of real countywide significance.
I think what people forget as well, you can actually go to Exeter College to its, is it called the 54 restaurant, Catherine? Or it's got a number, isn't it?
Yeah,
34, wherever it is.
Yeah.
And it's not just the chefs, as you say, they train in front of house, and you'll be very well looked after and get a great meal from the chefs of the future. Tell me about your columnist at the back.
My mum's memories of Devon, which is really nice. I was so glad that she was able to do that. They always do a piece at the back of the magazine, which is an individual associated with the county who has particular memories of it. Of course, my mum is a proudly Scottish woman. She grew up in the borders of Scotland and was dragged kicking and screaming to Devon by my father in the romantic days of their youth. And she's become, you know, a real passionate advocate for Devon and fallen very much in love with it. And it's really nice for her to tell a little bit of her story. And there's a nice picture of her in there too.
I met her actually, and she was a very remarkable and modest woman. I met her at the races. She was sort of seemed to be standing on her own. I was standing on my own. So we got chatting, and I said, "What's your name?" And she said, "Diana." So I said, well, just one name? She said, Diana Devon. I said, well, that's remarkable. You're named after the county. And we made the link and we had a good old chat and then went down and had a little flutter, I think.
That's good. Yeah, she's passionate about horses and horse riding, and particularly around the way sort of rural Devon works. You know, she's known it as a mum, and you know, she ran the business with my dad for many years at Powderham, and has really got to know the county really well. And I know she was obviously brokenhearted 10 years ago when my dad died, but you know, the community that's around her at Powderham and Frengiswold and such have really given her a new lease of life, which is great.
You talked, Catherine, about the one of the serious subjects in there, which you don't often cover, which is about housing. How did that article come about? And there's some remarkable facts and information in there.
Again, well, it came through Charlie's connections and interest and passion for the review that had gone on, wasn't it?
Yeah, we'd Exeter University and Devon County Council commissioned a housing commission review into the state of housing in Devon, which was chaired by Lord Richard Best, who sits in the House of Lords alongside me. He asked me to be on the commission, and there I met a number of other commissioners who were both academics and people in the house building industry. And it's one of the real tragedies, I think, for any young person growing up in Devon, is quite how challenging it is to find just the basic home and a home that's affordable and a home that you can actually do a normal job and afford to live nearby your job, and it's a blight on the county. And so many great students come out of Exeter College, Exeter University, Plymouth and places, and just have to go up country in order to find somewhere they can afford to live. And it's what are the challenges that give rise to that, and it's multiple different things, it's not a single issue by any means. And I thought it'd be really nice, particularly for an August edition where people are down here in the summer and, you know, they're thinking about the nice bits of Devon. It's like there are challenging bits to living in Devon, and I think it's important that we look at those and hopefully, you know, as a community, find ways to resolve them.
You are Lord Devon, and that's a hereditary title, but you are now also a working lord and have been by election since, what, 5 or 6 years now? Do you speak
2019.
What made you stand for election?
I was interested to understand what the role of an earl is. Obviously, I happen to live in the county of which I'm the earl, so there's local things you can get involved in. But obviously, the tradition, and we've been earls of Devon for centuries in various iterations, you know, the tradition is that you go to Westminster and you lend a voice on behalf of the county at the debates in Parliament. And I figured we wouldn't be able to do that for very much longer, so while I had the chance, I ought to grab it.
Well, there is a hereditary peer. Is this what it's called? The Hereditary Peers Bill going through Parliament.
Correct.
And you voted on that. What's your position? Look, this is going to happen. I'm going to abolish myself. I'm voting.
Yeah, you know, it will pass the House of Lords. I think today is the third reading. We've amended it a little bit, and actually, as amended currently, it doesn't abolish our right to sit. We would be, as it were, converted into life peers, but I don't think that will stick, and I think it'll come back to us once the Commons looks at it again. But my view is it's been somewhat inevitable for some time. I really wish they'd improve the House of Lords rather than just getting rid of the hereditary element of the House of Lords, improve the constitution of the House of Lords and make it better than it currently is.
How would you do that, Charlie?
Well, currently, you know, when you remove the hereditary peers, of whom there are 92, you're left with the bishops and the life peers. And the life peers are all appointed by the Prime Minister for the most part. And it's a massive increase in prime ministerial patronage. And we're one of the only countries in the world where one of our legislative chambers is entirely appointed by the executive, and that's unusual. And you get plenty of people appointed to the House of Lords who just don't necessarily do the work. They don't show up, they don't really attend, and they don't contribute. And I think the people that are there should be from a diverse background, diverse geography, and be doing the hard and quite unsexy work of making our legislation a little bit better.
And that diversity might not necessarily come, though, from elections. So you could still be appointed.
Yeah, there, you can still be appointed. There's a body called the House of Lords Appointments Commission that I've championed a bit in proposing a number of amendments to this bill, and they largely appoint members of the crossbenches where I sit, because we're not politically appointed, and that seeks to choose people known largely or colloquially as people's peers. I've called them the angels of Holac, but they're really good girls and boys who have done something in their life and in their careers, often sort of social work or other work that really sets them apart. And they're the kind of people who wouldn't get into the House of Lords by the political appointment means, because they're not necessarily political people.
And you say girls and boys, but you haven't been as successful as you would hope. You seem to me to be quite a modern man, a modern earl. And a couple of weeks in the passage of this bill, you tried to modernise and didn't convince your fellow lords to go your way.
Yeah, I've tried actually since I've been there. I think I mentioned it in my maiden speech back in 2019. You know, I am the youngest of four children. My dad was the youngest of four. It just happens that the other three siblings are women and therefore they don't get to inherit the title. And this is a tradition, a feudal tradition where titles pass by the principle of male primogeniture, like it used to be the case for the crown. And I figure it's about time now we're in the 21st century, that we might allow women to inherit hereditary titles so that the next Earl of Devon could be female.
Because you have an elder daughter.
I do have an elder daughter. I have a younger son. Not that I'm seeking to cast judgment on them as suitable Earls of Devon, but I do think in this day and age, with equality still with a long way to go, that we should do what we can to try and make at least the hereditary peerage equal.
And why do you think your fellow lords... Lords and ladies,
Lords
is it?
And ladies,
yeah.
But...
Didn't go along with you.
Well, you know, the Labour government, I don't think, wants any interference with the passage of this bill. It's a very short bill, and they just wanted it to go along, despite them offering some very warm words, saying we agree very much with the principle of what you're arguing, but we're just not going to do it now. And my concern is that if we don't do it now, there won't be any hereditary peers left in Parliament, and no one will really care, and it'll just be this sort of constant stain on our society, whereby... You know, and people may not think that hereditary peers, lords and ladies and dukes and duchesses are particularly important, but they do appear in our gossip columns a lot. They appear in news. You know, they're important people in their local communities. Often, you know, the local baronets or somebody something owns the big house in the village. And just imagine if in 50 years, half of those people were women.
And you own the big house in the village, and you mentioned it as a business a little while ago. And I was there 2 or 3 weeks ago seeing Duran Duran.
Oh, good.
Yeah. How do you expand and make sure you... And I know you've had... I think we covered it on our news just 2 or 3 weeks ago. You had a bit of a house sale, not quite a car boot sale, but a loft sale.
Yeah,
as
we
well.
Did a bit of an attic sale and cleared a bit of space and hopefully shifted a bit of energy. There's lots of stuff that's been packed into the upper rooms at Powderham for at least 2-3 generations. And I was just quite keen to throw some light on it, offer some opportunity for other people to have those objects. But it's a constant challenge. You know, Powderham, as anyone who lives in an old, slightly run-down house knows, maintenance is a constant challenge. And you've got to think of new ways to make it efficient. But Powderham has a really nice public profile. You know, the outdoor events business is obviously well known. Duran Duran and Basement Jacks recently. Bear Grylls is coming again in August, which is great. And then there's the day-to-day visitor business and the management of that. So we're constantly busy, always looking for new opportunities, but equally trying to keep the core of Powderham authentically itself. I don't want to turn it into a massive theme park or make it too exclusive or expensive. And, you know, I want it to be accessible, but I want it also to wash its face and look after itself. And that's not easy.
And you sound a very, very busy man, as well as editing Devon Life, running the family business, being an acting lord in the House of Lords. You also have a job.
Yes, I do. I actually have to earn some money on top of all that. And I'm a partner of Mitchamores, actually, which is a really strong Devon law firm based out of Exeter, but we have offices in London and Cheltenham and Bristol, as well as Sidmouth. And it's been really nice. I've been with them since, actually, I joined the House of Lords. I'd previously with a large American international firm, and it was just nice to have a bit of a homecoming. Really strong firm, and they do some really interesting work, and they've been very supportive of me being a slightly distracted partner from time to time.
You're a part-time. You're a barrister.
I'm a barrister. I'm trained as a barrister, but I'm an employed barrister now because I work in the law firm. And yeah, I work three days a week for them.
Catherine, was he a good editor?
Oh, he was an excellent editor, yes. It would be wonderful to work again with you another time, actually,
yeah.
Charlie. Yeah, writing in the magazine. Who knows? He might do. No, it was really good. It was very interesting, I think, always having... in my tenure at the magazine, we haven't had a guest editor, and it was an experiment for us and for me, but it was lovely to have another voice in and people taking the format of the magazine but adapting it to their choices and their feelings and their thoughts, a lot of which you just know are sentiments shared by a lot of people with a lot of those features that show. And there's some really lovely personal things in there as well, which was great. Personal, I know our writers and our photographers had a great time meeting Charlie, walking with him, going round his house, basically seeing your record collection.
You're still on vinyl.
I pulled out the vinyl. My kids got into vinyl a few years ago, so it was really nice to go up to the cupboards. And that's why you don't throw things away, because suddenly they come back in fashion.
And you enjoyed doing it. We've seen the magazine here for the first time today. We're recording on Monday. It looks superb.
It's been really nice. It has been a fair amount of work for all of us, I think, a busy time. But it's really nice to pull together a number of different stories and sort of cast a light on a few of these slightly less recognised aspects, particularly the sort of the kids at Michael Caine's, the kids who sing in the Powderham Live events, which is really nice. As it were, it's nice to have an opportunity to look at Devon. And Devon Life, I think, does such a good job at celebrating the county and so many good aspects of the county. So it's been really nice to work with them.
And I can vouch for that as well. It's a delight to meet you. And I hope it's some time before we hear that bell tolling.
Me too. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lord Devon Charlie Courtney and, no relation, Catherine Courtney, who's editor of Devon Life. That edition of the magazine is out now. Now, Teignbridge has celebrated a revamp of one of its key leisure complexes, and one that's been subject to a degree or two of controversy during the work. Broadmeadow Sports Centre in Teignmouth has had nearly £4 million spent on it to bring a tired 1970s facility into the 21st century. The new Broadmeadow looks a picture, with a new reception area, studios, a gym, and a room full of static bicycles with a magnificent view over the Teign estuary. James Teed, who's head of leisure at Teignbridge Council, took local Democracy reporter Guy Henderson behind the scenes.
Today is marking the reopening of Broadmeadow Sports Centre, 9 months worth of refurbishment. We've completely renovated all the interior of the building and we've decarbonised the site and made it much greener and cleaner and more energy efficient to run going into the future.
That's important, isn't it? The decarbonisation has been really front and centre with this.
It's a huge aspiration of the council, and this project alone served to satisfy a lot of their carbon reduction saving. So yeah, it's been huge. Air source heat pumps stood beside us, but all LED efficient lighting now, much improved and more economical air handling, heat recovery. We're really pleased with the work.
Now, a lot of people will have been to Broadmeadow before over the years. They'll have had classes here, they'll have played football here, they'll have done whatever. What differences are they going to see when they come back now?
Well, you can definitely still do all that, but we've improved the studio spaces, we've modernised all the studio spaces, we've introduced a downstairs accessible studio. All the gym spaces have improved in capacity. All the studio spaces have improved in capacity. We've relocated the reception to the front end, so you can get in through the car park now more easily. And all the changing facilities are updated and modernised, which is well overdue.
How much does it all cost?
The budget was about £3.7 million. So, yeah, we're pretty confident we're on target with that.
And in today's terms, that's not a bad price for what you've done here, is it?
No, I think it's a brilliant price for what we've done. We've done so much. I'm really pleased with the work and everyone who's contributed to this. It's been such a successful project.
James Teed there. Councillor John Nutley, who's Teignbridge's executive member for leisure, said the new Broadmeadow should prove popular.
I think people now will, once they start coming back, I think the membership will increase considerably. They'll say, from as it was before, I mean, the transformation that people will see is absolutely fantastic, I think. I'm overwhelmed with I know James, who's the head of leisure, he's obviously very pleased, as with all the staff.
And decarbonisation was front and centre with this, wasn't it? Tell me how the centre has taken care of that.
That's obviously improved. I know it was rather costly, but it was a thing that we're having to do throughout our establishments. But as I say, it's been well worthwhile, I think, in the long run. It's going to be beneficial for everyone. I know we've lost a badminton court, but even so, we've gained another area for gym. We've lost another court in the main hall, but again, because of that, the studio upstairs is increased in size, and it's actually a fantastic area to go to train, etc., and everything, I think, on that one.
Now, the project has been shadowed all the way through the council process by concerns from members of the Women's Rights Network over changing rooms. Broadmeadow has a men's changing room, a women's changing room, and some village-style locking changing rooms, which are unisex and can be used by families and carers. Cathy Murch was amongst a small group of protesters at the opening.
The WRN are doing a campaign around the country to highlight sports centres, swimming pools, anywhere where women are sharing their changing room with men, however they identify. So here, the issue at Teignbridge Council is we have separate women's area, we have separate men's area, but they're very small. We have a village changing room so that families and everything can change together, which we don't have an issue with, but we do have a issue about the safety and the layout. Now, the women's only space, we've asked Teignbridge Council to confirm it will only be women, and they refuse to. They say it's whoever identifies as a woman can use that space. So basically, we don't have a women-only space.
Do you think that that would put some people off using the leisure centre?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we've got huge cases of people being filmed in leisure centres. We've got cameras being put in leisure centres. We also know that men who like to expose themselves will actually walk around naked with a, "Oh dear, I didn't realise you were here" attitude. We also know that the layout here will mean that women are down one end of a changing system in a village changing room, potentially with a man next to them who would be able to leave his door open or put pressure on her because she has to get from the shower to the changing room and cross this area where she knows men are going to be. We also worry about young girls because young girls don't understand. So if a man suddenly appears in front of them and says, "Oh, sorry, love, I didn't know you were here," they're not going to understand what's going on. An older woman might. Older women like us would make a fuss about it.
So, I mean, in an ideal world, a village system would work quite well, but this is not an ideal world.
It's not an ideal world, and I think a village system, I've been to swimming pools where we've had them, where you know it's a family changing room, so you know what you're going into, and you know that there'll be lots, there'll possibly be men with children in the next cubicle. In the past, I wouldn't have worried too much, but now I would really worry if the doors didn't go down to the floor and also to the ceiling, because I would worry about a camera coming underneath. That is definitely a rising issue in women's changing areas. So I can see the use of it, and obviously, you know, my husband took, you know, my child swimming and stuff like that, so he would have wanted to be somewhere rather than maybe the men's, I don't know, but it's the layout, and I know that they are restricted here because they obviously had an older building, but I think the least they could do is guarantee us a women-only space.
Teignbridge Council's been through a lengthy legal process on the issue and believes it's got it right. Here's John Nutley again.
I can probably understand their concerns, and I'm thankful for they weren't disruptive for the opening and for the people that was here today. I know, obviously, it's very contentious of the changing areas, but I feel that, you know, we have now accomplished that. We abided by the law, and it's completely secure. I mean, families can come in, lock the door, individuals can come in, and they have individual showers, gents changing rooms, ladies changing rooms. And I would like to think the people, the ladies that are here, obviously that was in the protest as such, I would like to think they would come now and see the finish of that and obviously accept that what we've actually achieved in their desires, I think, on that one.
John Nutley ending that report from Broadmeadow Sports Centre by Guy Henderson. This is Devoncast, still to come, housing in West Devon.
The Community News with Radio X Podcasts.
I'm Finn Aston. Two Plymouth schools have been nationally recognised as schools of sanctuary. Mount Street Primary and Mill Bay Academy are the first schools in the city to gain the national accreditation. It awards schools' efforts of creating a culture of welcome and belonging for children from families seeking asylum and refuge. Plymouth's junctions and verges have been awash in vibrant colours in recent weeks. The initiative by Plymouth City Council aims to brighten up the city's green spaces for the community this summer. It comes after a consultation between residents and the council as part of this year's Summer of Nature campaign. And YMCA Plymouth has announced the launch of the inaugural Plymouth Community Champion Awards. This new event has been made to recognise and celebrate the remarkable individuals and groups who are making a lasting impact across the city. The award ceremony for the event will take place on October the 11th at Plymouth's Crown Plaza Hotel.
The Community News with Radio X Podcasts. Have your podcast professionally produced and broadcast on Devoncast Radio, the speech station from Radio X.
Now, if you have an item we should include on Devoncast's Community News, which also goes on Radio X across the county, email the details to news@radiox.co.uk.
Devoncast.
From Radio X.
I'm Paul Nero on Devoncast, and in a moment we'll be taking a look at how West Devon Borough Council is working to mitigate the housing crisis there. Before that, though, Radio X has been trying to give away £1,000 since January in a daily quiz. Last year, a similar competition took 3 weeks. This time round, it's been 7 months. Here's Matt Rogers.
The Vault.
Win big at breakfast.
Radio X.
And we're off to Newton Abbot this morning for the vaults. Hello, Neil.
Morning, Matt.
More specifically, Highwick, just outside Newton Abbot. How are you?
I'm good, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, well, how many times did you try this morning to get through on the vault?
Two.
Only two?
Only two. I've had mornings where it's taken 40 or 50 times and got nothing.
Well, what's the key? What's the key, Neil?
Persistence pays, I guess, Matt.
That, I would say so. And off-air, Neil just told me, never played the vault, right?
Never played. Well, I've tried so many times to get through, but I've just...
When you say you've never played, so you've never played this vault or any vault?
Never played any vault before.
Well, it would be absolutely bonkers if you gave me the right code. You would have a 100... Do you know anything about F1?
A little bit, yeah.
You'd have a record like Jenson Button's Braun GP team. Braun GP did one season in F1 and they won and that was it. So they got a 100% record. If you come on and give me the right code today, you could be... the vault equivalent of the Braun GP team. I'm getting too niche. Should we play the vault?
Here's hoping. Let's go for it.
Three questions, 10 seconds to answer each one. Must accept your first answer. Let's go. All right, Neil, for Radio X merch, let me hear you say way-o.
Way-o.
How many in a baker's dozen?
13.
It's the right answer. That's merch. Let's see if we can win you £1,000. If you win the £1,000 this morning, Neil, what are you spending it on?
It's going to be garden furniture. We've just finished a back garden, so it'd be nice to get some nice furniture out there.
Proper summer answer. I was looking at garden furniture the other day. It ain't cheap, is it?
No, it's not at all.
It's like if you want a sort of table and chairs, like we're talking the best part of a grand.
Yeah. It would cover nothing else other than garden furniture.
Let's get you some garden furniture, Neil. First go at the vault if you can get this question right. The Cockney actor, best known for playing Mick Carter in EastEnders, is 48 today. What's his name?
Danny Dyer?
It's the right answer. I'd do an impression of Danny Dyer, but I would end up swearing, so I'm not going to. Let's get another go at the vault for you. Exeter is one of the host cities for which Women's World Cup next month?
The Rugby World Cup.
That's two shots at the vault. It's been a while since anyone's had two shots at the vault. Please tell me you've had a look at the wrong codes.
Yeah, I've got them.
Have you had codes in mind for a long time on this?
No, not really. No, because I've been so far away from getting on, I've not even thought about it, but I've got the list of wrong codes in front of me, so I'm just going to go to something else.
All right, let's do it. All right, so first code, I'm looking for a Devon Secondary School and a two-digit number. What's code number one going to be, Neil?
It's going to be Queen Elizabeth School, Crediton 79.
Queen Elizabeth School, Crediton 79. Neil, in Highwick, good luck! Come on! Neil! Yes!
Yes, Sean!
You have just won £1,000!
Thank you so much.
You didn't even need two goes at the vault. £1,000 is yours. Garden furniture is yours, my friend!
Matt, incredible. Thank you so much indeed, mate.
You are welcome. And thank you, genuinely, for wrapping up this flipping game.
The Vault.
Radio X.
Win big at breakfast.
This is Devoncast from Radio X. I'm Paul Nero. And next, housing in West Devon.
Devoncast Radio is the speech station from Radio X.
And we educate and give people advice so they can make informed decisions about their finances.
And you could be on it.
Devoncast reports on the big decisions and the small ones that affect our wonderful county.
With your podcast broadcast to Devon and professionally produced at Radio X.
And then obviously COVID happened, and within COVID it completely changed the dynamics of children.
Find Devoncast Radio on digital radio or on the Radio X app.
Now, West Devon Borough Council is working to mitigate housing issues in the area by converting a former office building into temporary flats for people facing homelessness. Three apartments in Plymouth Road are expected to save the council between £45,000 and £75,000 annually on its temporary accommodation bill, which was nearly 60% over budget last year. This £500,000 project was funded in partnership with the Devon and Torbay Combined County Authority. The council intends to buy more homes for temporary accommodation using council tax on second homes and government grants. Despite having the lowest number of people needing temporary housing of all the districts in Devon, the council's lead member for housing, Councillor Mark Renders, says it's a top priority for the authority.
It's following on from, we announced the housing crisis quite a few years ago, and it's just the West Devon's commitment yet again to ensuring that it's our number one priority. The three flats that we've had a look at today are there aimed at reducing the temporary accommodation problem that we have. Although, having said that, I think our total's now at 23, so we are the lowest within Devon. But even so, we're not prepared to rest on our laurels. We're going to go as much as we can to actually do the best we can for the vulnerable people within West Devon.
So are these the first temporary accommodation flats that you've provided?
Not necessarily the first ones, no. We do have other stocks, but these are of the new bit that we did with the new investment. Yes, it was.
Okay, so what do you think? Now the work's all been done. What do you think of the flats?
I think it's brilliant, and I'm hoping when the people arrive, they'll get the same impression that I did. Or you do, we walk through the door, how well laid out they are. And if this can't be somewhere for them as an interim measure to, when they're in the stress that they must be under anyway, I think it's fantastic. They're very well equipped, perfectly positioned in the middle of town. So you've got all the amenities there. I know they're only short term, but hopefully they're there and serve the purpose that they're there for.
So you say short term. What's the maximum time someone will be able to stay in a place like this?
Well, it depends. I think it depends on what other accommodation becomes available, but it's still a far better option. If we took from a financial point of view, it's for the council, not for the individuals, obviously. Having to have people put up in hotel rooms, not very nice and very expensive. So we would treat it exactly the same as we would there, where in the meantime we're trying to find them somewhere more permanent.
Councillor Mark Renders. Now, many people are facing homelessness because of lack of available properties. The council's head of housing, Isabel Blake, spoke with Local Democracy reporter Alison Stevenson about what the council is doing to address the situation.
We've got private landlords that leave the market. It's not cost effective for them to be private landlords anymore. We've got housing associations where they've got, a load of unmet need around the properties that they've got, and we've got lots of people over-occupying their housing association properties that could downsize, and we offer a really generous downsizing payment to help those people, but unfortunately, it's their decision as to whether they downsize or not.
I remember doing a story on that recently West Devon's not had a great take-up on that. I think, is it £5,000 and possibly more than that with other things that can be done, carpets and curtains and things.
And housing associations also match that sometimes. So we offer that as another way of trying to get as much movement as we can within the social housing sector, so that we are helping as many people off the housing register as we possibly can, so that they don't get to crisis, so they don't need temporary accommodation. So preventing homelessness is always what we try and do.
What do you think are the barriers to that then? Why do people feel like they can't move out of their homes even though they're too big for them?
I think sometimes it's a lack of choice, that the accommodation that's available might not be where they are. They've got neighbours either side that they've lived next door to for 25 years. So I think all of those are quite significant barriers. And I think the lack of affordable housing, you just have to go onto Devon Home Choice and see what's available each week. And it's, it's a handful of properties. And the register is only getting larger. So this accommodation is to meet the need at crisis points. So just giving people who might be homeless because their private landlords have notice on them for no fault of their own. They want the property back, they want to sell it, they can't afford the rent anymore, or they might need to flee a domestic abuse situation. They might be young people leaving care and living independently for the first time. So there's a whole host of reasons as to why people become homeless. And this accommodation will be a temporary respite while we work with them to find more permanent options.
In the long term, then, it's about providing generally more housing, more affordable housing for people. How is West Devon doing that?
So we have got all sorts of different things. We work with a number of housing associations. We own two bits of land, one piece of land at Princetown, one piece of land at Wanacott's. We've just gone for planning permission for both of those. Not at Wanacott's,
Where's that?
Wannacott's is in Oakhampton. It's a piece of land that we own. We took a report last month to Hub, which was about a recommendation to go for outline planning on a piece of land that we own to bring forward 100% affordable housing. So we're doing what we can, but we're not a stockholder anymore. So bringing forward those bits of land, investing in our temporary accommodation stock, working with our RP partners to deliver properties. We've recently had new build in Lifton, in Tavistock, in Oakhampton, incentivising downsizing, trying to make as much of as we can as possible out of churn within the housing register. So lots of different things to do. But homeless officers are probably the only people that work every day to make themselves redundant and sadly never manage.
Isabel Blake from West Devon Borough Council speaking there with Alison Stevenson. And there's more on the housing situation across the county in a fascinating article by Matthew Dodd, who's the housing lead for the Devon and Torbay Combined County Authority. It's in the August edition of Devon Life, guest edited by our special guest this week, Charlie Courtney, the Earl of Devon. My thanks to him, to the proper editor of Devon Life, Catherine Courtney, and to Guy Henderson and Alison Stevenson from the local democracy reporting team. And that's it for this week's Devoncast. I'm Paul Nero. Josh Tate is here with the programme next week.
Catch the latest episode of Devoncast every Friday at radiox.co.uk or wherever you get your podcasts.